We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
New York cracks down on crypto mining. Plus, why crude shipping prices continue to soar even as oil prices slump. And Russia's munitions shortages raise questions over how long it can continue the war in Ukraine.
Certain key weapons and munitions are falling short, and it's repeatedly using weapons for purposes for which they weren't designed.
It's Wednesday, November 23rd. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. A shooting at a Walmart store in Chesapeake, Virginia has left six people dead, according to police. The city of Chesapeake, citing the local police department, said on Twitter that the shooter was also dead. Walmart said it was shocked at the tragic event and was working with law enforcement. New York has become the first U.S. state to restrict cryptocurrency mining. Yesterday, Governor Kathy Hochul signed a two-year moratorium on the reactivation of fossil fuel power plants for off-the-grid cryptocurrency miners, calling the move necessary to help protect the environment. Some miners had secured low-cost electricity for energy-intensive digital mining by bypassing the power grid and reviving closed power plants. Mining that taps into the electricity grid will still be legal, however. The Digital Chamber of Commerce, which represents digital asset mining companies and crypto exchange Binance, said it was disappointed in the decision and expected companies to move their operations to other states. Turning overseas, Credit Suisse has warned it would lose around $1.6 billion in the fourth quarter after customers pulled their investments and deposits over concerns about the bank's financial health. Switzerland's number two bank by assets said that outflows were around 6% of total assets between September 30th and November 11th, and customers in its wealth management arm, its main business, removed $66.7 billion. Those withdrawals led Credit Suisse's liquidity to fall below some local level requirements, though it said it maintained its required group level liquidity and funding ratios at all times. Credit Suisse is in the middle of a sweeping overhaul of its operations and is seeking shareholder approval on a plan to raise more than $4 billion in new stock. We turn now to the Democratic Republic of the Congo, where the capture of new territory by rebels from a group backed by Rwanda and Uganda called M23 has closed off the last remaining functional border crossing along the Ugandan border. That comes as simmering ethnic tensions in the area have erupted into the most intense clashes in a decade as warring militias fight for control of the region and its mineral riches. Research firm Oxford Economics has warned of a heightened risk that the situation could escalate into a full-blown confrontation on Congolese soil. Wall Street Journal reporter Nicholas Barrio has the latest from Kampala, Uganda.
Eastern Congo is a major producer of these minerals, tin, tantalum, coltan. These are important minerals that are used in almost every smart device, from personal computers to smartphones. And so truckers bringing in goods, including fuel and other merchandise, all those coming with minerals are unable to cross that territory that is now firmly under the control of M23.
Chinese authorities have notified Disney that the film Avatar: The Way of Water will be released in China on December 16th, the same day the film is slated to be released globally, according to people familiar with the matter. Disney and other Hollywood studios have run up against Chinese censors in recent years, and the last seven superhero films produced by Marvel Studios, Disney's most profitable film studio over the past decade, haven't received release dates in the crucial China market, denting global box office gross. A senior media analyst said that the potential box office from China is enormous. And in other market news, ambassadors from the EU's 27 members are scheduled to meet today to try and agree on a price for the bloc's price cap on Russian oil. Meanwhile, the U.S. Federal Reserve is set to release minutes from its November monetary policy meeting when it hiked rates by 0.75 percentage point. And U.S. durable goods orders and new home sales data from October are due from the Commerce Department. The cost of shipping oil between the world's ports continues to soar, with the daily spot price for some crude tankers now 11 times higher than it was last year. And here now with a look at what is driving these price increases, even as a gloomy economic outlook has dragged down crude near its lowest levels of the year, is Wall Street Journal markets reporter Chelsea Delaney. Hey, Chelsea, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So 11x, boy, we're talking about some big price jumps here. What is driving that?
Well, it's just another effect of Russia's war in Ukraine. Russia used to ship a lot of oil to the European Union, and that was a pretty efficient endeavor. So they would ship oil from basically around St. Petersburg to the port of Rotterdam and the Netherlands, and that took a couple of days. But now, because the European Union is trying to cut out Russian oil and gas, they're basically having to ship that oil to India now. That takes 26 days to get there from Russia. So we've seen the timeline for oil shipments just really expand, and they're taking five times as long to get oil from point A to point B. And that does have an impact. It's basically added a couple dollars onto the cost of every barrel of crude.
And Chelsea, what is the thinking here? Is this price pressure on crude shipping likely to continue?
Analysts do expect this to be at least a semi-permanent change because the European Union is set to enact a ban on Russian oil imports in December. So that will, you know, permanently change where Russia's oil goes and where the EU gets its oil from. What analysts expect is that Russia will have to send more barrels to Asia, and the EU will have to get more oil from places like the Middle East or the United States, and that just takes a much longer time. So that's something that isn't likely to change anytime soon as well. The other solution here would be to increase the amount of ships out there, but that's an extremely long process, and there's already a lot of orders for container ships, for cargo, so there's not a lot of optimism that there's going to be, you know, a sudden influx of ships to bring all of this oil around.
That was Wall Street Journal markets reporter Chelsea Delaney. Chelsea, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up, while both Ukraine and Russia have suffered heavy losses since Russia's invasion in February, Russian munitions shortages are raising fresh questions about how long Moscow can continue the war. We'll have that story after the break.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Let's turn now to Ukraine, where Russia's military has been burning through equipment, ammunition, and weaponry at rates that are now raising questions about how effectively and for how long Moscow can continue to prosecute its war. Wall Street Journal Bureau Chief at Large Stephen Fidler has been talking to Western and Ukrainian officials as well as defense analysts about Russia's military inventories, and he joins us now with more on this story. Hi, Stephen. Thanks for the time.
Pleasure.
What is the status, as far as we can tell, of Russia's ammunition and of its weapon systems?
Obviously, we don't know everything about the status of them, but there have been certain signs that certain key weapons and munitions are falling short. There's been a significant fall in the rate of fire of certain ammunitions. Even shelling has fallen off. The barrages of missiles that we saw in the early part of the war, the rate of fire of these missiles has dropped. We've also seen Russia having to turn to other suppliers. Russia's a major weapons producer. It's turned to other suppliers like Iran for some of these weapon systems. And it's repeatedly using weapons and missiles for purposes for which they weren't designed. So it's using ground-to-air missiles, air defense missiles, essentially in ground attack roles, And it's also using anti-ship missiles, which are basically designed to hit huge metal objects in ground attack roles. And that's led to a number of significant civilian casualties where the missiles have veered off course.
You mentioned Russia turning to other suppliers. Why is that? Can they not produce more weapon systems to make up for what's being used on the battlefield?
Well, I think the Russian military production industry isn't all that nimble and was struggling to produce weapons even before the war. That's according to kind of Western intelligence estimates. And of course, it's been using enormous amounts of weaponry and munitions in part of the war. So gearing up the industry would be significantly problematic in any case, but especially so because of the new Western sanctions that have been placed on Russia, which are limiting its access to electronics and microchips and this kind of thing, things that are needed for precision weaponry. Now, some of these things are getting through. Some of these microchips are obviously being smuggled in, but there is a constraint. It does seem to be constraining the Russian industry, and that's why they've turned to Iran, not only for drones, which have been having a significant impact in this war, but also, it appears, possibly also for some Iranian short to medium range missiles.
And Stephen, are the Ukrainians dealing with similar challenges as the Russians?
Yes, I think I would say up to a point they are. The Ukrainians have significant Western support and Western backing, and obviously stronger economies backing them, whereas Russia is mostly dependent on its own production, despite what we said about Iran. And so Ukraine's heavily dependent on Western supplies now. And I think one particular is air defense, which it really does need not only air defense systems to defend against the Iranian-made drones that are now sort of being used significantly, but also the ammunition so that they can be effective in a missile defense role. So I would say the major shortage at the moment is for anti-aircraft systems and munitions, which the West is trying to gear up to produce.
And just fitting this all together, Stephen, how is Russia's depletion of its armaments and Ukraine's, I suppose, likely to affect the future course of this war?
Well, it's clearly an unknown factor, but what it does say is that the Russians cannot continue to barrage Ukraine with the high precision weaponry that they've used before and would tend to use lower precision weapons. On the Ukrainian side, if the Ukrainians cannot access proper air defenses, then what we've seen in the war so far, which is Russian inability to take a superiority of the air over Ukraine, if Ukraine can't get its air defenses in order and the Russian air force can get over Ukraine, then that could make a very significant difference in the war. So it's possible that, you know, this is limiting Russia already and would limit it in the future from prosecuting the war as it would like to. But on the Ukrainian side, I think there's a significant need for air defenses so that Russia can't gain air superiority over the country.
That was Wall Street Journal Bureau Chief at Large Stephen Fidler. Stephen, thank you.
Pleasure. You're welcome.
And finally, restaurants across the U.S. this year are serving up Thanksgiving meals with a twist, creating unusual flavor mashups that mix different elements of the traditional holiday feast. But how unusual, you ask? Well, try turkey-flavored ice cream, turkey and gravy soda, or a breakfast cranberry taco with cranberry salsa. Divisive as those flavor combos may be for some, Markets Watch writer and Wall Street Journal contributor Charles Passy says that restaurants aren't complaining about diner demand.
Frankly, a lot of the businesses I was talking to were really selling these products. I mean, the restaurant in Duluth, Minnesota that sells the Thanksgiving burrito, they're going to run out of stock of turkeys pretty soon. They ordered, I think, something like 87 cases of frozen turkeys, and they're already two-thirds of the way through it, and they plan this for the whole month of November. So consumers like it, it sells, and in some ways it gives the businesses a chance to get out there with social media, get their name out there. But truthfully, almost everybody I talked to said they're selling these things pretty well.
And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.